my first play really ever, you know, in college as a freshman was against Tom Brady, who he wasn't even a starter that game. They brought him off the bench to put him in the game.
Oh, wow. Right?
And now fast forward years later, I'm still playing against the dude.
What's going on? It's Keyshawn, and welcome to my show, Undisputed Presents All Facts and No Breaks. Joining me today is a 7-time Pro Bowler, Super Bowl champion, and 2024 Hall of Fame inductee, former Indianapolis Colts, Dwight Freeney. What's up, D-Friend?
Oh, man, nothing much. How you guys doing over there?
Good, man. Good. My son, Keyshawn Johnson Jr., will be joining us as well. So I just want to say, let's start off by saying congratulations on that Hall of Fame nod. That's big.
Congratulations, man.
And I appreciate it. Permanent smile. Permanent smile, Keyshawn.
How you feel, man? How did you find out that you got the nod finally?
I mean, obviously, you know, the feeling, it's hard to describe other than just complete joy, surprise, you know, regardless of how and what kind of career you had. You know, you know at some point it's going to happen, you hope and you pray. But when that moment actually happens, you know, you are overwhelmed with emotion. I found out, you know, they know where to find me. I'd be on that golf course. I'm on that golf course often. So Coach Dungy, when I was walking into the clubhouse, which I never go to the clubhouse, I always go straight to my golf cart, straight to go hitting some balls. Coach Dungy's sitting there looking at me, man, telling me, hey, you're going to be in the 2024 class of the Hall of Fame. Cool. And I had a conversation with Peyton Manning not too long after that. And he told me, you know, when you find out that you're going in, for him, that was the moment that he remembers after all that happened after that. You know, the enshrinement, all the gold jacket dinner. He said the moment you found out for the first time for him was the most monumental time. And for me, honestly, time kind of stood still in that moment. You know, and there's only a few moments, you know, your firstborn child, maybe. And this moment for me was, look, I was kind of speechless. I said, I can't believe this has happened.
You know, the Colts' presence continue to grow in Canton. You got Peyton Manning, you got Edgerrin James, yourself, Bill Polian, Coach Tony Dungy, Marvin Harrison. But this is, where's Reggie Wayne at, man? Like, come on now. Enough's enough already, wouldn't you say?
Man, who are you telling? I mean, Reggie was an animal out there. And people don't understand it, and I get why. You know, they're trying to keep him out, I guess. You know, it's because Marvin was so great and obviously Peyton was so great. You know, I don't know if they're tired of having greatness out there or he's living in the shadow of Marvin somehow. But when Marvin left, they all knew who the guy was to stop. And they couldn't stop Reggie. He was still getting double teamed and he still was putting up tremendous, crazy numbers, you know, carrying that offense. For years. So, I mean, I know it's going to happen. I don't know what they were.
Yeah. So your journey began in Bloomfield, Connecticut. You were a multi-sport athlete, right? You played a little bit of football, basketball, soccer, baseball. Yeah. What drew you to just sticking with football?
Well, to be honest, Key, it's kind of just how it all worked itself out. You know, I played all sports. I was soccer, baseball, basketball, obviously football. You know, I was in bowling leagues. I was doing all types of stuff because, for me, I loved sports in general. But the thing is, you never knew what was going to happen. You know, I didn't know. You know, I wanted to be like Bo Jackson. I wanted to play baseball, basketball, you know, football. I wanted to play all the sports if it was possible. I wanted to be the first athlete to do it. Obviously, from a scheduling standpoint, it's pretty much impossible to play three sports. But that was my dream as a child. All right. Now, I do believe it's important for kids today to kind of go out and do everything. You don't know kind of how it's all going to shake itself out. Obviously, you're not going to have 6'1 power forwards in basketball. So that was a wrap for me. I didn't have a jump shot like that. I was fouling, hacking people, playing defense. So that wasn't going to happen, right? Baseball, I was a center fielder. I played some first base, but my arm gave out. My pops was my pitching coach, or my pitching was my head coach. So he had me on the mound like I was, you know, Dwight Gooden or something like that, throwing fastballs. My arm couldn't take it. So that kind of went to the wayside. So really, you know, football ended up being, you know, the journey and the angle, obviously, for me to where it was, I could succeed and be, you know, my best. But it wasn't, you know, if you asked me when I was in high school, I couldn't tell you.
Yeah, you talk about the journey. Certainly, the journey through Syracuse led you to the pros, where you dominated the Big East in college football. You were anonymous All-American, Big East Defensive Player of the Year, 34 sacks, 17 sacks in your senior season, which is a school record. You hold Syracuse's single-game record with 4.5 sacks on Virginia Tech's Michael Vick in 2000 at the time. You still are the number one in NC2A history in sacks per game, a little bit over 1.5 a game. You also were inducted into the College Football Hall of Fame a year ago. I'm still waiting. You know,
I don't know what they're waiting for.
I don't know. It's pretty wild, but you know, there's certain rules in college sports that you can't have too many guys from one school go in one class. So I think we a little bit log jammed over at USC. When you talk about what you were able to do in the NFL, there's this patent move, I call it. That whenever I think of a spin move, I think of Dwight Freeney.
Yeah.
Where did that come from, and how did you just master it at the level you did?
I mean, look, this move for me originated in high school. Now, Key, I know you're going to know this. I don't know about your son going to know this, but there was, back in the 90s, all right, there was a mixtape out called, you know, And-One Mixtapes.
Oh, I'm very familiar.
There you go. So And-One Mixtapes was basically, for those who are watching and don't understand, it was, you know, guys on the basketball court, street basketball, and, you know, you had the offensive guy dribbling the ball. And most of the time, he may have been traveling. Who knows? There was no ref out there to call it, right? And he would try to make that defender, whoever's defending him, look as silly as possible. So he would be doing all types of moves, throwing the basketball over his shoulder, crossing, breaking ankles. So for me, I wanted to find a way to bring that to the game of football. So I was in a practice field one day. And I said, man, how do I make this offensive tackle look as silly, as crazy as possible? I want him to be falling all over himself, breaking his ankles. And for me, that happened to be a spin move. All right. And I started to kind of work it in high school, got better in college. And then by the time the pros come, I was already a well-oiled machine. And I would get real creative with it, depending on how they're blocking me. But that started, you know, really origination for me was basketball.
Yeah, I don't know why we're showing Arizona Cardinal highlights, Keyshawn.
I was going to ask, did you have like someone on And-One that you got the spin move from? Maybe like Skip to my Lou or like
someone? No, really, it really wasn't. No, there wasn't. Okay. It was just more or less just me trying to be creative on the football field.
Okay.
That's where it was. You know, I always had Joe. I was always called for traveling when I played on the basketball court. I'd be on the post, Key. I'll post this dude up. I'll get the ball, and now here, drop step. Every time I do a drop step, the ref called traveling on me. Now, if you look at the drop step and how you turn in the drop step, that's kind of how you move when you're doing a spin move. Mm-hmm. So maybe it was just meant for me not to play basketball, and you're moving, taking that move to play football, right?
Yeah, how many times did you get caught though doing that spin move where you got hit in your chin?
You know what? Man, I honestly can probably count on my hand how many times that has happened.
Yeah.
And that's usually key, is if they slide the protection to me and that guard is sitting waiting for me.
Yeah.
All right. And that's happened a few times. But you learn real quick after your bell get knocked, you better know where that guard is, and you better know where the protection's coming, because you're going to be knocked out seeing stars on that sideline. So I learned and picked up the right way to do it, right time to do it, et cetera.
So you got drafted by the Colts in 2002 with the 11th pick in the first round. You were 6'1", 270 pounds, so you was like a little bowling ball. But yes, small man. For a defensive end, defensive tackle, anywhere on the offensive line for the most part, undersized, given the fact that they were bigger defensive ends. And there was a lot of noise. Oh, this guy's a shorter, stout guy. Maybe he's more of a nose, those sort of things. Mm-hmm. How did that affect you, if it did at all?
Well, I always like to use kind of any type of negative criticism as fuel to the fire, you know, as a chip in your shoulder, something to keep you motivated. You know, all those days where you're just like, man, I'm not working out today. Or I'm not going to go. I'm not going to go and do that extra rep on the bench press, squat rack, whatever. You use those moments and those times where you just want to just say, stop, it's okay. You know, you've done enough today. And I did that throughout my entire career. I've always said, Key, what do I need to be 6'5 for? I mean, I'm not blocking shots, grabbing rebounds out here. I start at point A, I got to get to point B. That's it. That's it. And there's somebody in front of me. I have natural leverage. I'm already lower than you. So for me, it was better for me to be the stature I was. Now, I wasn't small from a weight perspective, really. I was just, I guess, not tall enough. So they wanted me to knock down passes or something. But listen, if I'm knocking down passes, I'm not doing my job because I'm not on top of the court.
Yeah, it says usually big. Like, what was the normal size for a DN, like, in that era? Because 270 sounds...
but the thing is they forget about the 270 part, but it's all good. It was 6'4", 6'5",
okay,
from a height perspective. So if you look at Julius Peppers, my fellow classmate, he, in that era, was prototype 6'5", you know, Bruce Smith, looking guy, big.
Simeon Rice.
Simeon Rice. 6'4",
you know, like those types, Reggie White, defensive end, Richard Dent, those types of big defensive ends. Mm-hmm. So when I came out, there really wasn't anybody at my size that was drafted at that time, at that place in the draft. If we were drafted, we would be a tweener, outside linebacker, maybe third down specialist, per se. But, you know, we weren't really drafted guys at, I guess, my height stature.
Man, JP was, you talk about size-wise, he was a different animal.
Peppers?
I played with him in Carolina.
Oh, yeah.
Obviously, I played against him. And the first time I played against him, I'm like, what the fuck is this? This dude look different. Big old just... head this big, just hands big. Like everything about him was just big. Wasn't nothing small about him at all. He just
nothing.
Huge.
Nothing. Just dominant force. You can't do nothing with him.
So you played 11 seasons with the Colts, 16 total. I don't want to look at no more Atlanta Falcon film and Arizona Cardinal film. I don't want to look at them days. I want to see the Colts. But you went on to help them win their Super Bowl 41 in 2007. Yeah. What was that feeling like to finally get a championship delivered to Indy?
Oh, man. It's one of those feelings that, you know, you dream about. And for you to achieve it, it's literally one of the best feelings you've ever felt, because you're not just doing this by yourself, right? You're doing it with everybody else with you, that bled with you, that sacrificed with you, that grinded with you. The city is on fire. Everybody's so excited. And that energy is something that, you know, for the rest of my life, I'm going to remember and feel a remnants of that feeling. you know, it was awesome, Key. It was awesome, man. They can never take that away, right? So in the end, you know, whatever happens, I lost two more. I don't like to talk about it, but I do have the one that I have, and that one is going to carry me.
Wait, what did you lose two at?
2009. One with the Colts. I lost. I had a high ankle sprain, okay, and that was versus the Saints. They did the onside kick, you know. And
oh, we just had Morstead on here that did the onside kick.
Yeah, don't let me get on the onside kick. The onside kick happened, Key, and I looked up. I'm on the side. I looked up. Man, they had about 15, 16 people on the field trying to get people off of the pile. I'm thinking to myself, look. Can't bring guys from the sideline trying to get on the field and try to find who has the ball. Man, they got to stay over there. But anyway, we can't go back. And then the second one was the Atlanta Falcons versus the Patriots. I don't like to talk about it.
Oh, okay. I didn't realize you was on that team. You know that?
Yeah.
No, I didn't realize.
I was on that team.
No, I didn't. I knew you was in Atlanta.
I was on that team.
I just didn't realize.
I was on that team, Key.
Wow. Yeah, that probably wasn't a good feeling because you probably thought, we're getting ready to celebrate.
Didn't we all?
All we had to do, Key, is run the ball and kick a field goal. That's all I know.
Yeah.
But I don't like to talk about it.
Your sidekick, Robert Mathis, you and Robert probably formed at that time two of the best as far as a duel goes in the history of the National Football League. Do you still keep in contact with Rob?
Yeah, Rob's doing good, man. He's doing good. You know, he deserves to be where I am. And, you know, when I love talking about Rob because Rob was an undersized guy like me, and he went out there and played every play like his hair was on fire. And I loved it. And, you know, there's one stat that people do not take seriously enough and don't give enough credit is forced fumbles. Mm. What people don't realize is a forced fumble is equivalent to an interception. And it might even be more important because of the fact that usually when you recover the ball as a defensive lineman, it's behind the line of scrimmage, which gives you even better field position.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Robert has led the NFL's history in forced fumbles, getting the ball back. All right. But if you led the league in the history of the game of interceptions, you'd probably be already in the Hall of Fame, first ballot. But people don't give that enough credit. People don't talk about it enough. I think he was just awesome at what he did.
When you look at today's game and all the rule changes and you know, some of the things that go against the defensive side of the ball, how much harder would it be for you to play in today's game, the way things are? Not that the rules have changed so drastically from 5 or 6 or 7 years ago, but they have changed. How would it be? Yeah. How much difficult would it be for you to be able to do some of the things that you're capable of doing?
Well, Key, I would still do the things. I would just get fined. I would be fine. That's all I could say because the problem is, you know, I understand what the NFL is trying to do. Okay, I get it. It's trying to make the game safer, and I appreciate that. But that being said, this is a violent game. It's a game of controlled violence, and there's violence in every position. And there's a guy for a defensive lineman. There's another guy across that's 350 pounds as an offensive lineman. He does not want me to beat him. As an undersized guy trying to make a move around someone who is 6'7", 6'6", 350 pounds, I got to use everything I got. Okay? I got to use my momentum, my speed, my acceleration, everything. When I beat that offensive tackle, Key, and I'm coming around the corner, it isn't like I can just slow down.
Right.
You really can't, because it ain't like he's just, you know, after you beat him, he's looking at you. Okay, well, I got beat. All right. Hey, watch out, quarterback. You about to get hit. he's out there trying to push me to get me off of my path to the quarterback. He's not just giving up. So I have to accelerate through the turn. And as I accelerate through the turn, there's a quarterback sitting back there. It isn't like he wants to get hit either. All right? He's not sitting there saying, oh, here comes Freeney. Okay, go ahead and sack me. Go ahead. Just go ahead and do it. He doesn't want to get hit. So not only do I got to beat my offensive tackle going full speed, now I got to get to that quarterback who doesn't want to get hit, and I still have all my momentum with me. How am I supposed to control that at all times and be able to now tackle him, quote unquote, properly? It's not easy. It's not an easy thing. All right. And people who've played the position can tell you the same. It's not an easy thing. So basically, it just comes down to, Key, is if that ref wants to call that call on this particular play. Mm-hmm. Because every play, there is somewhat of a collision. There's somewhat of the weight being put on the quarterback. There is some of the slamming him down. But at what level, at what point is it too much? All right. So I think it should be honestly a reviewable call where, you know, because it's so monumental. Reviewable and looking at intent. Did you intend to hurt him? Did you intend to slam him down, etc.? That's just what it is. But I would just get a whole bunch of fines. That's all I know. Because I just have to play the same way I always play. Right. All right. And that's just how I play. I play hard, and I got to get the quarterback down for my defense, my team, my city, etc.
What's the, you know, I never got an opportunity to catch you slipping from the side on a crackback. I got many defensive ends, but I never got to get Dwight Freeney. What's the best tackle you ever went up against?
Jonathan Ogden. Jonathan Ogden, by far, I would say, because I mean, I was lucky enough and unlucky enough, and however you want to look at it, is to play in the golden era of offensive tackle. You know, I played against Willie Rofe, Hall of Famer, Walter Jones, Hall of Famer, Orlando Pace, Hall of Famer, Jonathan Ogden, Hall of Famer. I mean, that was the era of where, you know, you better come with that serious work or you're going to get thrown out the club, you know, like aggressively going against those types of guys. So for me, you know, I think Jonathan Ogden was probably the top of that list. He was the corner that never came. He's a mountain of a man. So you go, and what I mean by the corner that never came, Key, is like, you know, you're trying to run around the corner, and usually you see daylight around the hip, you know, and then you can turn. And I'm still running today. I still can't see that corner because he's so big and so long and so athletic. He's like a dancing bear. So thank God I had a spin move. I could go back the other way because I don't think I ever beat Jonathan Ogden outside of him, around him, because he's so long. He's so big. So I think if I think about all the guys that I played against, he was probably number one.
What was the toughest quarterback to sack?
I'm going to give you two answers to that. All right. I think one surprising answer, it might be two surprising, but I think one, Tom Brady wasn't easy. And the reason being is because of how, from a system standpoint, they was getting rid of the ball under 2 seconds, period. They knew the strength of our defense. They knew what was going on. So I said, look, I don't care if you open or not, receiver, this ball is coming out. Done. You know, so I think when you're playing against a guy like that, you better have your best move. And even if you have your best move dialed up and you win on your best move, you still may not get there. And that becomes very frustrating as a rusher, because you understand is that this ball will not be on this man's hand because he does not want to get sacked. I think he's probably, you know, one of the most underrated from that standpoint. People don't talk about it enough. And I think Steve McNair, he was country strong. And I would come around that corner and I would hit him. And I swear I felt like he hit me back. I mean, he is like hitting a wall. right? And the thing is about him is he's also mobile. So he can also just be elusive, make you miss. So when you're trying to go and try to tackle that quarterback, you got to figure out what you're going to do, because you can go ahead and try to hit him as hard as you possibly can, but he can make you miss. So if you then say, okay, you know what? Let me not go as hard as I can and just try to wrap him up, then he's going to throw you off. I think Steve is a beast, man.
Is there any quarterback that you would have loved to sack that you just, you look back and you said, man, I wish I'd get my motherfucking hands on him, and you just couldn't?
Oh, man. You know what? I wanted to, Brett Favre was one. I only played him once. He was with the Vikings at the time. And I just never got an opportunity to get him. You know, he was just one guy on that list where I'm like, you know what? It'd be good to add Brett Favre to the list of quarterbacks that I've gotten. And I think I gave him a knee or something like that when I ran by him. I can't even remember. It was some type of glancing blow. But he was another guy who ain't want to get sacked. But that, you know how it is. You start getting older, you don't want to get touched. You don't want your body to get hurt, period. You want to get on to the next. So as soon as I played him, that ball was gone, man. 1.5 seconds.
When you were off the Colts, you didn't want to sack Peyton?
I mean, that's a constant. Yeah. Obviously, I mean, that is, you know, look, when you in practice, you get yelled at and screamed at if you in within five yards of the man. You know, Marvin Mathis, you know, he sent me a picture, I guess, when he played against him when he was at Denver. And he, I mean, it's the greatest picture in the world. Peyton getting killed by Marvin. I mean, by Robert. And his face is all twisted up. And it was awesome. But, you know, that's kind of like one of those things where, you know, we love you, Peyton, but, you know,
yeah,
never got an opportunity to hit you. But Robert finally did. But it is what it is.
Well, speaking of Peyton, I heard he used to DJ on the Colts team playing after wins. Is that true?
Playing what? Country music?
That's what I was going to ask. What type of music was he playing?
I'll be honest with you. If he was DJing, I ain't hear it. Maybe he was in front of the plane. I didn't hear the music. I didn't hear it.
So bringing up Tom Brady again, you faced Tom Brady numerous times over your career in the NFL. But you also played him in 1998 when Syracuse played Michigan. Let's watch that.
Here's the fourth down. Again, as I said, trailing by 24. He needs more than a field goal. Syracuse has answered everything so far defensively. They've got it. Brady down. Almost beating the snap count. Dwight Freeney from Bloomfield, Connecticut. A blue chip recruit, a freshman, played 4 years of basketball, baseball, also lettered in soccer. You're looking at one of the fine ones.
And again, there's Bullock in there. They're crowding the middle of the line against Michigan. Nash, number 10, is in there as well. And Freeney comes free and makes the big play.
Be a penalty right now. That'll be a penalty right now, by the way.
Yeah, that doesn't work here now, huh?
Hey, Dwight, either y'all were good or Michigan was sorry as hell. It was 24-0, man.
We put that hammer. We put the hammer on those boys, man. I don't know what got into it. I mean, we actually were good that year, though.
Yeah, no, Syracuse used to be good.
We were good that year.
Do you remember that tackle, though? Was it an important tackle to you at all?
Absolutely. I think that actually might have been my first play as a college player, period. I was a freshman. I was a true freshman. So that was, it's kind of crazy how, you know, everything kind of comes full circle. My first play really ever, you know, in college as a freshman was against Tom Brady, who he wasn't even a starter that game. They brought him off the bench to put him in the game.
Oh, wow. Right?
And now fast forward years later, I'm still playing against the dude.
Yeah, I was going to ask, what was it like to have played against them both in the college and NFL? Like, you obviously, well, maybe you did, but the progression from being Tom Brady to the GOAT, like, how did you see that?
Well, look, I didn't care about him in college.
Yeah, exactly.
I was a freshman. I didn't know nothing about Tom Brady, and Tom Brady wasn't a great player in college either.
Mm-hmm.
All right. I think Tom just developed over the years, ended up staying in the same system for a long time,
mm-hmm.
and flourished within that system. right? And when you can stay in the same system, doing the same things, it became just like, you know, tying your shoelaces, you know, and that's how Tom got so good over the years. You know, he wasn't a beast when he came out in a rookie, as a rookie. They protected him. He ran the ball. They did things. Now, as his career, maybe 8 years in, 9 years in, they gave him, you know, free reign to do whatever he needs to do, that he needed to do within the system that he was in. But he was, you know, he was a guy that obviously throughout the years just kept getting better and better until he is in the conversation of being one of the best quarterbacks that ever played.
Okay. Well, while we're on the topic of GOATs, you're a pretty avid golfer yourself. You mentioned it, and you've been partnered up with Michael Jordan a couple of times. What's it like to play with him?
Man, it's kind of crazy. And when I say that is, you know, people remember him on that basketball court, you know, with that eye, look in his eye. You know, Utah Jazz got to hit the final shot, right? And you just think of that in, from a basketball perspective. But it's crazy is he got that same look on a golf course. And not only that, he does hit those miracle shots when his team needs it on the golf course as well. I mean, it's crazy when you play with him, all of a sudden, you know, you'll be 130 yards out. And completely messes up his drive and completely, you know, he got to make it now. And he's 130 out. And somehow by a miracle, he'll make the shot. He'll make the shot from 130 yards and it'll just roll right in. It is absolutely insane how he just pulls those types of things out.
That's crazy. Well, guys, the great Allen Iverson statue was revealed in Philly this past week and it created a social media uproar. Iverson was presented with a kid-like statue that resembles like Mike's Calvin Cambridge more than the 11-time All-Star. Guys, how foul is this? Let's take a look of it.
All right. Oh, wow. Wow, is that in the building?
They got him looking bad. Well, it's a good statue. It's just little, like, I don't know if it's the stance. Listen,
is that going to be in the building or is that literally outside of the building? So, and that's where it's going to be.
So there's the Legends Walk at the Sixers practice facility, if you see right there. So it's going to be next to those ones right here, but it still looks small compared to the...
Yeah, that's not the stadium. It's at the practice facility.
Oh, okay.
So I'm okay with it. It's in line with everybody else's. That's just... Everybody else's statue is that size, so I'm okay with it.
Yeah.
But on first glance, it looks crazy, right?
Man, listen, it looks absolutely nuts because you think about... all the other big statues that they have everywhere else, you'd be like, man, this is disrespectful. But if you look at the fact that they have all of the other statues the same size,
yeah,
then it's fine. Then
yeah,
it's fine.
I was worried about Bubba then Chuck for a minute. I was worried about it for a minute. I was like, I know they just did two AI like that. But now that I see it, it all makes sense.
Yeah, okay,
it
so
is what it is.
Go ahead. Okay, yeah, so we want to play a game before we go. So here's your chance to build the best possible starting defense lineup of all time. So you can use the players of any era. Both of you guys would do it. So we'll have two DNs first.
Oh, man. Okay, this is what I'm going to do. Oh, man. Golly. Okay. I'm gonna do a 3-4 defense. All right, let's just do it that way because I don't know. There's too many linebackers I got in my brain right now. I'm going to go with Bruce Smith, and I'm going to go with Reggie White.
Okay.
And then for my
D-tackle.
Oh, yeah. You're going to do the order. Okay.
Go ahead.
The D-tackle, I'm going to go John Randall. Okay.
And then linebackers?
My backers, I'm going to go Ray Lewis, Junior Seau. And I'm going to go with Lawrence Taylor. I'm going to go with, who am I going to go with the other side? Oh, man. Lawrence Taylor. I'm going to go with, that's the tough part. I'm trying to figure out who I want to come off the other edge. Let's go to safeties. I'm going to come back to that. Okay. Let's go to safeties. There's too many great players, man. There's too many great safeties. I'm going to go Ronnie Lott.
Mm-hmm. USC legend.
I'm gonna go with Ed. I'm gonna go to Ed Reed.
Okay, and then corners.
I'm gonna go Deion. And I'm gonna go maybe Charles Woodson
at corner. Okay, and then you got one more linebacker.
Oh man, I'm gonna go with. Who am I going to go with my outside linebacker? Oh, my goodness. He, you're not helping me.
I know. Help him out.
No, I ain't helping him. I'm going to let him pick his own.
Oh, and then you got your own? Okay.
Oh, my God. Who am I going to go?
Does he have to be? But you want him to stand up with his hand in the ground?
We said 3-4. So
3-4. I'm just trying to figure out who's going to be the compliment.
Man, you can always put Julius Peppers out there. He can pass rush. He can drop. You know, he's athletic. You can go Von Miller.
Oh, man. Let me see something. I'm going to tell
Charles, you can go Derek Thomas, Charles Haley.
You know what? I'm going to go Derek Thomas. I think if Derek Thomas and Lawrence Taylor's coming off the edge, what are you going to do?
What are you
going to do?
Nothing.
You can't do nothing.
Slide to protection somewhere.
You got to start it.
Oh, my God. That's my lineup.
Well, I'm going to go Reggie White.
Yeah.
Right, so two DNs.
Reggie White at one end. I'm going to go Aaron Donald in the middle.
Okay.
Yeah.
I'm going to go, I can go Deacon Jones or... You know, I'll go Deacon Jones at the other end. At linebacker, I'm gonna go Ray Lewis in the middle.
Mm-hmm.
I'm gonna go Derek Brooks at the wheel.
Mm-hmm.
I'm gonna go Lawrence Taylor and Derek Thomas on the edge. Yeah. Ooh, man, we ain't nobody gonna score no points. Ed Reed, Ronnie Lott in safety. I'm going to go Deion at the corner, and I'm probably going to go Rod Woodson at the other corner.
Okay. So your guys' safeties, corners, and DNs are pretty the same, but the linebackers are, like, interchangeable.
Yeah, Derek Brooks is going to be my wheel.
Yeah.
I got my mic in Ray Sugar Bear, Lewis, and I got the two monsters on the end. I got an old head and Deacon Jones at one defensive end, and I got Reggie White at the other, and I'm putting Aaron Donald in the middle.
Yeah. I don't know how many points. Who's going to score?
Nobody.
Yeah, that's cheating. That's nobody. Not even fair. That's cheating all day. That's cheating all day long. You were in our game in 2002. Were you a rookie that year? Y'all played us in Tampa?
I was a rookie.
Yeah,
2002.
Yeah, 2002.
2002 was my first year.
I don't know how the fuck y'all came from behind.
Oh, you're talking about when you went to the locker room?
Yeah, 2003. Man, I came back from the locker room. I went to the locker room. We was up by like 28 with like five minutes to go.
It was terrible, kid. It was one of those, everything went right and everything went wrong.
I couldn't believe that. I was like, what the hell?
We brought him out. We brought him out, the overtime, being in overtime.
Yeah.
It was crazy.
But I was happy. I was happy for Coach Dungy returning back to Tampa and getting that W. I was happy for him.
Yeah.
Well, thanks, Dwight, man. Thanks for joining us on the show.
Thank you so much.
We really appreciate it, as always. Love to have you back, you know, in the future. No problem at all. Again, congratulations on making it to the Hall.
Congratulations.
Thank you. Thank you, man. Y'all take care. Whenever you want me, I'm here, dog. Let's do it.
All right. That's a wrap for today's show. Thanks again to Dwight Freeney for joining the show. Don't forget to subscribe and follow All Facts Pod on social media. Until then, peace. I'm Keyshawn. I'm out.